In the last episode of
the Psychosemantic Podcast,
Leslie was undecided about killing herself, so she decided to kill Billy instead. Dutch has finally decided to decide between Eunice and Corinne. When Bert and Danny decided to stand up to Tibbs, Tibbs decided to have them knocked out.
Bradley, Jeremy, and Darren discussed American Psycho.
The judge said she would decide on whether Jody or Carol receives custody of Wendy. Now that Mary's baby has decided to appear, will it also be able to disappear? Or will it be as normal as everyone else in the family? And what have the fates decided for Jessica? Confused? You won't be after this episode of
The News.
Welcome to the News Podcast. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are dropping another Robin Dunn movie.
The third. It's the third in our series. Or third,
fourth
in our series.
We don't know. They all blend together after a while.
But this is just another drop in the Robin Dunn bucket. All hail the sequel king.
We're doing American Psycho 2.
American Psycho 2.
But what's the colon that goes along with that?
All American Girl.
That's right. Because which I thought it was a Margaret Cho sitcom. Wasn't that her sitcom, All
I
American
don't know.
Girl? Don't worry about it. Keep going.
Well, today with us, we have Darren from the Psychosemantic Podcast. Darren, say hello.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having me on. I feel like it's been forever since we talked last.
I know.
Yeah.
It's just been... Well, see, we got to talk with Darren on Psychosemantic.
Correct. This is like a to be continued.
It is. We
Part
talked
two.
There about American Psycho, and then he was gracious enough to join us to do American Psycho 2.
All-American Girl.
All-American Girl.
She was an All-American Girl.
So we definitely...
Speaking of Tom Petty.
yeah, we definitely appreciate you being here and going through this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
As you said, it's the Psychosemantic Podcast. It's on the iTunes, Stitcher. I'm in the Legion Podcast Network very recently, so you can be found on all their devices and their website. It's really quick. It's politics, movies, and political movies, which basically means I can talk about anything because anybody can turn anything political, but I really try to keep it stuff that is generally agreed upon. So, I just have different guests, different podcasters. This is actually my first crossover episode trading shared theme thing I've ever done. So,
which
thanks
is
for
us too.
Ours too. Yeah,
what?
we've been super excited about this because.
Yeah.
It's the first time we went down this road, too.
Virgins together.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to be on some shows, but it's
right.
More of a trading episodes. It wasn't 1-2 American Psycho, American Psycho 2.
It
hasn't been. Yeah.
What,
they've been like, oh, somebody's sick. Can you come on? And
no.
You were the understudy in a podcast?
You are not the fill-in. You are,
the
you
star,
are a special
Darren.
Guest here. Yeah. No, We at some point went, wow, our show really lends itself to a couple things that we didn't think about. So, like crossover episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the things like doing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
Out of the Shadows, the one in the 90s.
The Secret of the Ooze and then Out of the Shadows. And I'm like, wow, that opens up a whole other door of things that we can do. So, yeah, we've been excited at all the new prospects that we've been thinking of. So, well, real quick, why don't we play a quick promo from your show, just so everybody can hear it and can go find you there.
Correct. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Thanks.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
This is not a test. This is the Psychosemantic Podcast.
Announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government. Weapons of Class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge. All other weapons are restricted. Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge and shall not be harmed.
A few days ago, I called the news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
We have Ben Jacobs, that's the Guardian reporter, body slammed tonight by the Republican candidate Greg Gianforte.
Like living with a six-year-old.
I do want to be honest.
I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
That is one big pile of shit.
Well, then you two learned a very important lesson today. Cops don't help.
It's a prank!
Now's not the time for fear. That comes later.
Can you fly, Bobby?
In the 20th century, the Senate voted on 7 Supreme Court nominees during election years, and it approved all but one.
So just to put a button on this, are you ruling it out 100%?
Yeah.
Are you crazy? Is that your problem?
Politics. Movies. Political movies. The Psychosemantic Podcast. Better known as the Psychosemanticast.
He did what we all must learn to do. You and you and you and you. Duck and cover.
All right, we're back.
So thank you for sharing that with us, too. So, I've enjoyed your show, just listening to it and experiencing it. You know, it's been good. You should check it out.
My favorite was the Gods and Monsters episode.
Thanks. Horton, that was the one I think I put the most effort in putting together.
Oh, it was awesome. it was pretty amazing. Yeah, and the Rollerball one was pretty fun too.
Oh yeah.
I liked that one.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. You know, maybe you guys can come on next year because the Pride Month is going to be an annual thing. Where I want to do at least one episode. I tried to do the whole month and I couldn't really do that. And I missed out on getting anybody to do Black History Month with me. So,
we can't help you with the Black History Month, but we can help you with the Gay Pride Month. Yeah. I wonder what we could do.
All right.
We'll discuss that.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, why don't we just get into it here to talk about American Psycho 2, All American Girl. The sooner we get through that, the better.
A little background about this movie, though, right?
Yeah. So
it stars Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis. So
I was so in love with her.
Until you watch this movie.
That is why I watched the movie. Because I had heard it wasn't the best.
Yeah. Well, I like Mila Kunis as a person. I think she's grown as an actress a lot, too. She seems to be – I think she's matured. Her acting has matured over time, too. But this is – I mean, this is back 2000 – she must have filmed it in 2001.
2001?
Yeah, so –
No, this was 2001. So, the original movie came out in 2000.
Right, and this came out in 2002, I think. So just to give some background, there was actually – this was not connected to the American Psycho movie. This was not made as a sequel.
No.
Yeah, it was I think it was called The Girl Who Wouldn't Die or something like that.
Yeah, The Girl Who Wouldn't Die.
Yeah, and so it was a
or different... the plot that wouldn't reveal itself.
Yeah, so it was written as a separate movie altogether, And, you know, they were trying to produce it, trying to put it together. Lionsgate saw that American Psycho, it didn't do as great in theaters, but it did have this really great second life on DVD.
Right.
And so they went,
2 years later, you're thinking the DVD sales were...
Yeah. And so they went, wow, you know, that's great. So we should do a money grab based off that. And so they took this movie and retooled it and repurposed it to basically cram Patrick Bateman references into it.
Mila Kunis says that she disowns this movie.
Well, right? So, yeah. So Mila Kunis came out after that and said, when we filmed it, I didn't know that it was going to be an American Psycho thing. It was like a whole different property. So I didn't know it was American Psycho 2. But, you know, somebody put something out there, put out like a, petition to get them to stop this, word of mouth, whatever, because it's just bad. But as we watch this, she dubs, like she does the voiceover and she has lines where she talks about Patrick Bateman.
There was a whole 5-minute plot with her and Shatner. Yeah.
Well, so, and it's her voice. So for her to basically say she had no idea that it was involving that at all, I think is disingenuous, but I think she's kind of going with,
also, you
kind
don't
of
see,
with the flow.
You
of,
don't see the Robin Dunn, the sequel king, going, hey, disregard this movie.
Yeah,
he's like, I did this movie. Yeah, there you go.
There you go. It's another feather in his cap. Is.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I could think of is that maybe she meant something like, I don't know about movie contracts.
Right,
but I'm sure what that 70s show was started in 1998 okay, so, and she was like 14 when that started.
Yeah,
so I don't know if she had signed on and they're like, oh well, this is American Psycho 2 now, you don't have any choice, or if she's actually saying they made me do it, or I don't know.
I don't know.
But it's not the first movie that somebody didn't. The girl that was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, Jerry Maguire girl.
Renee Zellweger? Yeah.
Didn't her people try to get that movie to stop that one from actually coming out?
Yeah, they did.
Because they were made around the same time.
Well, it came out much later. I think it got shelved and it came out much later once all of a sudden people were like, oh, hey, that's so-and-so. And they're like, quick, get it out there. Because I saw it and I was like, why is young Matthew McConaughey and young Renee Zellweger in this?
I think they all, like, DiCaprio has a movie like that, Don's Plum, which is very notorious for... him kind of not letting it get out to distributors.
Yeah.
But you can watch clips of it. It is terrible. Oh,
yeah,
God.
That doesn't surprise me. It's like him. Isn't like Toby McGuire.
Toby McGuire.
Yeah, and
him,
a bunch of other people.
They're just saying like terrible things.
Yeah. Sounds about right. So let's get into the movie here. So we get right into it. We open on a refrigerator door opening to reveal a bunch of heads on plates. And so we get a shot of a man in a robe who puts on rubber dish gloves and is selecting a knife. And he's moving towards this woman in a dress. And there's a little girl there. And at this point, we start getting Rachel Newman, who's played by Mila Kunis, starts narrating about that when she was young, the babysitter took her along on a date. And I didn't know babysitters did that.
No, they don't.
It's odd to me, but took her along on a date. It just happened to be with a serial killer, Patrick Bateman.
Okay, first of all, that robe is not a designer robe.
No.
There's no way that's Patrick Bateman.
And where did the fireplace come from?
Right?
Yeah, it was... And the whole layout was different. So I think it was like a different
two-bit
Yeah, like, and later we see it. It looks like a whole different hallway, different whatever. But you know, he in all fairness, in his movie, he rented multiple places.
Yeah,
and took Paul Allen's apartment.
Yeah. So who knows?
Okay.
And she goes, "I knew he should have gone to the movies.
Bad stock options. Yeah. He you know hit you know rock bottom. Yeah. Who knows?
So, but by this point, they're insinuating it's been pretty prolific. Because this was what like 5 years ago or something. So I mean, he'd gone on for a long time apparently.
And we all know he loves wearing like dish gloves when he kills.
Yeah.
Because he's got to wash the dishes right after that.
And obscuring his face from the camera.
Whatever.
So so Rachel gets free, but instead of running, she grabs an ice pick and basically sneaks up behind Patrick Bateman and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So...
this big serial killer.
Yeah. So then...
this little girl kills him.
Yeah, you know. So... the FBI, it turns out they find him and tied a bunch of murders to him, and she says, "I hear they even wrote a book about it, only in America."
So I paused this movie. It's about 3 minutes in the movie. I paused this movie and I yelled because I was like, "What are they making? Are they trying to meta reference the Bret Easton Ellis book of American Psycho, or what are they trying to do?"
Yeah.
It seemed odd to me.
Yeah. I can't excuse it. I can't.
I was at such a loss for words. I just drew an angry smiley.
I was so angry about that.
Emoticon on my page.
You just shit upon everything that was that first movie and everything. Oh.
Well,
within 3 minutes.
Right, but you get the sense that it took the ambiguity out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of the American Psycho crossover is just done with the narration, so they didn't really visually add that much if it was crammed on at the end.
True. Yeah, I agree.
Right. It could have been any killer, you know, but I think it's a lot more of just the audio aspect of it. But, of course, the little girl then just leaves. She doesn't wait around for the police or the FBI or whatever. She just gets away. She says she devoted her life to stopping other serial killers, which is why she wants to join with the FBI.
Yes, and then I call her Girl Dexter at this point.
That music. Yeah. The music throughout the movie. The music throughout kept the writing movie. Down, here's the Dexter music again.
Oh, really? I kept calling it Little Rascal Sneaking Music. Because it was like I said what the fuck is this music, this whimsical sitcom music? it was driving me nuts. I was like, why is it so humorous?
Coming soon,
like,
this ABC Fall.
It seemed
it's
like
American Psycho,
like,
American Girl, the sitcom.
I feel like they were like, well, let's make it a black comedy.
Do you think Chuck Lorre would write that?
No.
Well, it would be terrible. Not. He probably would.
Just a title card that says, "I'm sorry," at the end. so she has this weird line about, and I guess this goes into the what can you trust, you know, the unreliable narrator piece of this, but she said her parents wrote her off as she got older. Her mom was an alcoholic and her dad was a philanderer. Was like sleeping around, like banging a secretary or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
And so she goes, well, now I go to school. West Washington is the university.
Much better than East Washington.
Which has
those assholes at East Washington.
Those East Washington bastards. go fighting.
The most glamorous. Criminal, whatever.
Prestigious behavioral studies program. And you know, she looks like a normal college kid who's starting out and walking past other people and talking with people on the quad and whatever.
Basically,
so,
we had to set it in Washington because it's close to Canadian border all the Canadian actors that are in this movie.
Yes, correct. At first, I thought they were trying to make, like, a Washington, D.C., like West Washington, because it's close to Quantico.
Right.
Mm-hmm. An but, American girl, and she's got that American flag shirt that she wears in almost every classroom scene.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I didn't even think about that.
Did you know? Okay, so in every classroom scene, not only do the kids keep switching back to the same sets of clothing, but the same thing is written on the board. Mm-hmm. Like, it, obviously, they just filmed them all in one day. Yeah,
I did notice that. And did you also notice when, like, for every classroom scene, I was snoring?
Yes,
I did. Did you notice that?
There was a couple times when I was like, are you awake? And it was just you were like rolling your eyes so hard that like your head hadn't come
it
back
was late
around
at night
being
when
upright
we watched
yet.
This.
We misjudged time really bad. And this is a bad one to like keep you engaged at midnight. So,
No, this is not a midnight movie.
So we find out that she is Rachel is studying under Professor Starkman, who is played by William Shatner, who used to work for the FBI. He was the best, but suddenly quit to teach without much explanation. Mm-hmm. They said some say it was after the death of the last killer he had been hunting, Patrick Bateman.
Oh, the mysterious Patrick Bateman.
So things are tying together.
Pat Bates.
Oh, Pat Bat. So, yuppie, 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 Pat. So,
same yuppie time.
As sang by Huey Lewis in the News. So, nine of his last 10 assistants have gone on to work for the Bureau. So, a lot of students compete to be his teaching assistant, so that they can get into the FBI pretty easily. Like, obviously, he's a good pipeline to that.
Sure.
So
he's chat.
Yeah. So her grades are solid. She says she's, like, top of the class. But she has a lot of competition. So here we go. First off, we have Brian something or other. I didn't catch his last name.
We didn't get his last name.
They said it, but I didn't feel like...
He doesn't
like...
need a last name. He's a god.
I was going to say, normally I would go back for and be like, no, hold on. I want to hear this whole name. But I was just like, keep moving. So...
don't stop.
Pull off the Band-Aid.
So we have Brian. He has a low GPA, and he's a party boy, doesn't really take anything seriously. But his dad is a major donor to the school, and so...
His last name is on the name of the building that they're taking their class in. But
there you go.
I can't remember it. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's fine. But his dad is this big major donor, so obviously money talks. The second competition is
played by Robin Dunn.
Yes.
You just totally like blew that. Bye.
I got so I was.
That's
so
what we're doing
in,
this
I was
whole
so
thing
invested
for
in his
Robin
description.
Dunn.
But it was by the sequel king, Robin Dunn. So the second person is Cassandra Blair, played by Lindy Booth, who apparently her grades are fine or whatever, but she's banging Starkman. So she's gotten in there. Although...
She's going boldly where everyone has gone before.
Yes.
And it's not the first famous professor that she's banging while in school in a horror movie.
Really? What else was she in?
She was in Cry Wolf, okay. I believe, where she is banging Bon Jovi. Professor Bon Jovi. Really?
Professor Bon Jovi?
That's something God. I never thought I would hear.
I need to watch that.
Professor Bon Jovi.
Professor Bon Jovi.
So, Lindy Booth has a type. So, but she's banging the professor.
I don't know.
Although,
she downgraded with Bon Jovi, didn't she?
Although Rachel doesn't think maybe it's true.
It's short hair Bon Jovi, if that sways you either way.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Give me the mullet any day.
It does not. Yeah. If you're going to just own the mullet, it's
give
okay.
Give me the spandex pants.
So the third person is Keith Lawson, played by Charles Officer.
And a gentleman.
But they basically, they don't really talk much about him.
Not really.
Like, she just says, like, he's my only real competition. Like, he has got good grades, and that's it.
Okay, sorry, thanks. Dude.
Cannon fodder.
Yeah,
pretty much.
So it's like, they just don't go into anything. So then Rachel again talks about how she didn't think Cassandra and Kirkman were together until she sees him giving her this locket. And then she knows, you know, they're serious.
If you open that locket, I'm sure it's a John Bon Jovi hair.
Is it?
Yeah, it has to be.
No, it's like a Shatner pube.
Oh, God. God. Now I have to think of that.
We're going to sell those on our website, so.
That's a good band name,
Shatner pube.
Yeah.
Shatner pube.
Shat pube. That might be something else. But
what kind of music would they play, do you think, Darren? Shatner Pube?
Shatner Pube would probably be either something like the Presidents of the United States of America.
No, that's
or a thrash band.
Yeah, I was thinking like speed metal, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Thrash band. I'm calling it Shatner's Pube. So Rachel is in the process of submitting her application. And she's, like, in the administration office. She hears Brian threatening the administrative assistant. And, you know, with the classic, do you know who my father is? Bit, you know.
We don't. We know it's not Griffin Dunn.
Yeah, so that we know that he's some some richy rich guy. So, basically, he comes out and he, I think at this point, Rachel's looking at this Employee of the Month plaque for that administrative assistant. And he comments on her plaque and says someone should bash her head in because she's the bitch of the month, and somebody should bash her head in. And then he basically is complaining because they said his GPA is too low to apply for this position, but he's going to have his cousin hack his records. Classic. after he leaves, Rachel goes in to talk to the administrative assistant, who says that freshmen generally aren't eligible for this assistant job.
Okay, she's a freshman. We've established now what grade she's in.
Yes.
She's a freshman, didn't have to take any prerequisites to get into this prestigious class about criminal law or whatever.
Yeah.
To get into this at West Washington.
Yes.
My God.
But she's already dangerously behind on track.
Right.
Yeah.
She should go to Greendale instead. Yeah.
So they said, well, generally freshmen aren't available or eligible to apply for this, but we'll see if we get you an exception. But I can't guarantee. And the lady's like an obnoxious Kathy, the version of Kathy and Jimmy.
Kind of. Oh, my God,
I feel like she does Lemon Pledge commercials or whatever, but she's...
Pledge commercials?
Yeah. But she's like going on and just very bold, whatever. I'm sorry, I can't promise anything. But she says it's usually only for sophomore and juniors.
She's kind of bitchy to be like the best like employee of the month.
Yeah.
She does not take
that. People turned away. I'm sure she just turns people away. Overlords appreciate that. But
the
basically,
well, if she's the only person in the office, then she's always employee of the month.
That's true.
That's true.
So this woman basically is no help. So later, we see the same woman. She's leaving for the day, and we can see where our perspective is like watching her through these branches.
This is my favorite scene of the movie, by the way, that's coming up.
Right.
It is.
So somebody's following her. So she gets home, and she starts walking around and going, Ricky Martin!
Ricky Martin!
Where are you, Ricky Martin? So she's going, we're going... I kept thinking, wouldn't it be great if Ricky Martin really lived with her? But I figured probably not.
Like the band members
under the coffee table.
Like, hello, lady.
The band members of Menudo just come out of the coffee table.
And then she says, "You got some serious splaining to do." And I went, "What?" I was like, "Are you mixing your Rickies now? Did you mean Ricky Ricardo? Is that what you were getting at?" But she.
And then she's like, talking to Ricky, like Ricky talks.
Right. And she was like, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, like Ricky Schroeder.
So,
I bet she jumps off the couch like Keith the Dragon Steamboat.
So we see a hoodied figure at this point with gloves on take what we assume is Ricky Martin, the cat, and puts it in the microwave. Now, this was, I was like, oh my God, they're going to blow up the cat in the microwave,
right?
Or cook the cat. Crazy. So the buttons get pushed, beep, 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 which draws the woman in there. And she opens it right away and goes, oh, hey, Ricky Martin. And I was, how'd you get in there? And push the buttons from the outside.
How do you think a cat got in there?
Well, I keep
the
thinking.
Cat doesn't, like, claw the door.
What was your aim with this? Like,
right.
Besides from, you could have just beeped and had her go in there, but instead you.
You use the cat as, a distraction?
Yeah, but you weren't actually going to blow up the cat or anything. You were just drawing her there with the cat in the microwave. Anyway.
I don't know.
That's when the hooded figure jumps out and starts beating her to death. With her employee of the month plaque.
Shebangs.
Yeah, and we see her dead in the reflection of the brass plate. So,
the award of foreshadowing.
There you go. So then we see a very similar looking hooded figure walking down the hall in the student dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it's Brian. So he's at Rachel's room, and he's trying to chat her up. He suggests an alliance to eliminate the other competition. So, of course, he's Robin Dunn. So Robin Dunn is charming and funny, and, you know, like, he has a good blend of, like, humor and charm and sleaziness all at the same time that he can exude here. But he gets her to agree to go on a date with him.
Wait, are we to assume that Robin Dunn killed her? Or thought?
See, I wasn't quite sure on that, because you
weird.
Don't see. Like,
you
okay,
don't
she,
see.
She wears a hoodie for everything later.
Yeah.
But he's wearing the hoodie in that scene. And coming
maybe,
right in.
Maybe she's killing another killer. Maybe she wasn't completely crazy.
Yeah. Because, I mean, maybe he killed that first lady and then.
And maybe she's not killing anyone. It's all in her imagination. And the only thing that this movie is killing is my patience.
That might be true as well.
That's also equally viable. Her babysitter's still on a date with Patrick Bateman right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is just imagining killing her. It has been fine. Nothing but a gentleman the rest of the
eating
time.
Eating sushi, just looking at it. Ooh, look at this
and
sushi.
And making sure she doesn't put her spoons on the tables and things. But, so the holidays are coming up. Cassandra, who I was unclear at that point if she was Rachel's roommate or not. Apparently they all have their own rooms.
I thought she lived with her.
No, she didn't.
She didn't?
I don't think so. Because
no,
because
there's a part where she says, yeah, you're probably going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
About why did you come to my room?
Right.
Yeah. And then later, yeah, like so they all have these individual huge rooms at this university.
Oh, it's like Felicity dorms.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're big ones. So, but she's surprised that Rachel isn't leaving on the holiday vacation. And she says, well, she has a lot to do. It's just to write this paper and everything. Cassandra, it turns out, is going with Bobby, who, a.k.a. Professor Starkman, up to his cabin when he gets done spending time with his wife and kids. So
they take so much of his time.
Yeah, they take so much of his time. They're his family, is what she says. I was like, there's like bits of this where like sometimes I'm like, okay, that humor played to me, you know, like the whole Cassandra being oblivious or kind of like unrealistic expectations of this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that usually made me laugh. But Rachel and Brian end up going out to this restaurant, this French restaurant. They order some drinks. And Brian confesses that he's done some research on Cassandra,
No, Robin Dunn's pretty good in this scene. Yeah. He's not terrible. I actually enjoy him in this movie.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, but he's not in it that much.
No.
But go ahead.
Yeah, so he confesses he's done some research on Cassandra. If she gets the teacher administrator or teacher assistant position, he's going to send an anonymous letter to the dean's office along with some incriminating photos, which I assume were taken by the same Sluggerazzi
from Au Pair.
From Au Pair.
Or his cousin that could hack and change his grades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hacked into somebody's. Did they have webcams yet?
I don't
know when this is actually set. I know it came out in 2002. I don't think they had a time jump.
That's true. We don't know, because if that's the 80s, we don't know if this is the 90s. So yeah, that is a good point. I don't know what time it is.
Yeah, they're not very clear.
Yeah.
I don't remember cell phones really. I thought it was supposed in the movie.
I thought it was supposed to be fairly contemporary to
really. Then
the
that's
time. I don't know.
I think we're trying to make
the
something
fashion
out of
was
it.
Not the fashion was not like a period fashion either. Right. It was then.
Well, that means that Bateman was killing for because that was because she grew up. Okay, never mind.
Yeah,
getting confused.
We all are.
Mm-hmm.
I think so were the writers.
It's really confusing after a while.
So he's gonna provide this and basically discredit him, unless he gets his way. He says he's determined. He's gonna go to extremes. His dad donated money, it looks like, to not only the school but to build something at the FBI as well. So he should be a shoo-in to get that role there. Then he offers her a 7-figure payout to drop out of the program. So, not shabby.
No.
But they'll pay to get him in there. She, of course, turns him down because that's her dream. So, but they end up heading back to her place, drunk, of course.
A very believable drunken hallway scene, I feel like.
I was just hearing you say, they're like in the same hallway, and they're just running from like door to door, trying to figure out which room is theirs, and occasionally like dancing in the hall.
Yeah.
Ripping stuff off people's doors.
Yeah. Holy terror in this one hallway that they can afford to use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty awkward.
That's what you learn at freshman orientation.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
If you were drunk and you're stumbling through,
just
pull stuff off people's doors.
But it's like the first movie too. You know, if he's running down the hallway with a chainsaw and everybody's like, meh,
right?
You know, are they all just ignoring it?
But, yeah.
So they get back to her room, and she's of course undoing his belt, and they're getting ready to have sex, and she comments about condoms. He doesn't have any. He says he can go get
for
some.
For his mini Robin Dunn.
Yes.
Yeah. When the time comes, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's like, oh, the pull-out method, the pull-out and pray method? Yeah, great. Real classy. So, you know, he's saying, well, I could go see what I can find. I can do whatever. She goes, nope, I'll go down the hall and borrow one from a friend. And so, you know, just get comfortable. So he, of course, you know, jumps back and lands on her bed, and it crinkles, and he realizes there's a tarp underneath of the blankets, which I think he
calls them piss sheets.
Yeah, he thought that she wet the bed, and that's why they were under there.
Yeah,
but I think it's there to catch
a mood killer,
blood and whatever else. Yeah. Some people pay extra for the waterworks.
Allegedly, some presidents.
Fake news. Fake news. So he's lounged back on her bed. He looks over at the side and sees there's an ice pick next to the bed too. And so he's rolled over and he's looking at it. And all of a sudden, somebody reaches around his neck with a condom. And starts strangling him with it. And cuts away, and we see his feet kicking until he's dead. And then it's the hooded figure who turns out it's Rachel. Surprise. She takes it and she makes sure she gives this stellar line. Ribbed for her pleasure.
Great.
So now I want to call out a couple things here.
Go ahead.
I don't know in what universe a single condom is strong enough to strangle somebody to death with, where it's not going to like break or rip or whatever.
Right.
Does not seem very, very likely to me.
No.
But also, you know, we're 25 minutes into this, and we have regicide.
Yes.
Lord Robin Dunn has
Robin
been killed.
Robin Dunn is dead. We paused it and said 25 minutes in, and I said to Jeremy, okay, then we're done with our podcast, right?
Yeah.
We're done. So we're done. We're just going to let you do the rest, Darren.
Yeah. It's all you, man. No, okay. So, but
no, I'm just joking.
The next hour was rough because I was like, who the hell cares once Robin
Who the hell cares
dead?
About these people? That's not why it was rough, but.
But yeah, so. And again, I wrote whimsical music question mark.
Oh, God.
it was always this weird music playing. But yeah, so she kills the rich boy the first thing in. So
right.
She should have gotten paid first. And then done it.
Yeah,
but,
that makes sense.
But, you know, or we're not worried about that, apparently.
The only thing that matters is that teacher's assistant job and Quantico, because she is in her second semester of her freshman year, and her life is seriously behind track.
Yeah, seriously. Mine was, too, at that point.
Yeah, I am.
I was like, what? She keeps repeating, like, the same... It's like they were copying and pasting it in the script. Put Quantico in every other line.
Keep reminding them.
Yeah, we got to remember.
Maybe
that
was her safe
about.
Word, and she was trying to get out of the movie.
Quantico.
That's probably what Quantico. It was.
And so then they added the FBI element into it, so there was no escape for her.
Yeah.
Fine, you're going to the FBI. So she disposes of the body, like I think buries him somewhere. And after doing that, she decides she's going to see a shrink. So we meet Dr. Daniels, who is completely scored by an even goofier soundtrack than everything else.
Oh, my God. What's with you in the soundtrack? You hated the soundtrack.
It was terrible.
Like, that's the one thing that was terrible.
It seriously bothered me a lot. I would rather have had it be dead silence. But Dr. Daniels is played by, not quite sure how to pronounce this, Geraint?
Like I thought it was Garrett.
Is it?
I don't know.
Garrett? G-E-R-A-I-N-T? Wynn Davies? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. The funny thing is, I went as...
Yeah, we'll go with
his,
that.
I went in on his IMDb page, and he was in the recent Hamlet.
Oh.
With Fassbender.
Nice.
And I'm like, what? You do Shakespeare stuff? Yeah, that's crazy.
So she goes to this psychologist, basically, and says she wants help. But, you know, it's difficult for her because she's afraid to show her Achilles heel. You know, and she's worried about exposing herself. So,
is that what, like, you were attracted to Mila Kunis's Achilles heel? Is that what it was, Darren? That's what did
it?
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely her Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And it didn't hurt that I am, and my wife will attest to this, I am very attracted to crazy women with pretty eyes.
Well, she fits the bill.
Well, there you go. And so does her character.
She fits the bill in the car. She fits the bill.
Just all over the place. Yeah, God. So, she says she knows she'll get the job because she'll do what she has to get it. And there's like a few weird throwaway pieces too with like who do you want to be? Elizabeth McGuire. That's his current, you know, teacher's administrator or teacher's assistant. I want to be like that. You know, she's...
You want to move
everything
up,
she's saying is related to the teaching assistant job. So clearly she's a little obsessed.
Maybe.
Just a little. So Daniels, as soon as the session is done, immediately calls his friend.
Yeah, immediately Starkman. Breaks every rule.
Yeah. And in 1 hour, he has apparently successfully diagnosed her as being a sociopath. and he tries to, he's like, well, let me try to warn you. I just wanted to warn you. And he's like, well, who is she? Well, I can't tell you that. So let me try to say who it is without saying her name. And Starkman's like, oh, it's a her.
Oh.
Like that. It's like playing Guess Who. But with your students. And
you're Cassandra.
You're a killer, you know, and trying to figure it out. Daniels can't say who, of course.
Am I having sex with this person? Yes. You're Sandra.
No, there probably would still be a few of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a few still up. Well, so, could be Josie. Yeah.
So just then, Rachel comes back in for, like, no reason. And Daniels bumbles to get off the phone. Like, he's... Oh, yes, Mom. Of course, Mom. Yeah, and like talking, pretending, and Starkman's on the other line going, Mom, Mom, like he's somehow intrigued.
Yes, call me Mommy.
Yeah, exactly. He's like oddly aroused by that. And so then she gets vaguely threatening about his ex-wife, about Daniel's mom, who he lives with. She's vaguely threatening about, like, don't mess with me. And then leaving again.
So keep in mind, we still have two people who are dead.
Yes.
And no one has found them or reported them missing.
Yeah, nobody seems that interested.
No one's interested.
Yeah.
Well, it's a couple days before. So I wouldn't think anything of the rich kid with shitty grades leaving before spring break starts.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I get that.
If I'm honest. Like
the administration assistant, that one I don't get.
The administration lady?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she's knitting sweaters for her cats back home or something. She and Ricky Martin.
That one's harder. Yeah, I mean, maybe she did take Ricky Martin to the beach, but you would think she'd be there until the very last bell, being employee of the month and all that.
Yeah, I would think so, too. So now, let's see here. Rachel decides to go on a run so she can be her best and basically clear her head. So she realizes tonight is the dean's behavioral sciences party, because why not? and she has to be dressed to kill.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah. So she makes it to this river where she's just like staring at it, and there's a refrigerator which she throws a bottle at. And I thought maybe that was going to
totally
be.
I totally forgot about that scene.
Yeah. I thought maybe it was going to be like that's where she was stuffing bodies or something. But I don't.
Same here.
I don't think it really comes. It kind of comes back to it.
No.
It comes back to the river,
right?
But it doesn't. Yeah. Like the refrigerator thing is just a nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, she arrives at the party late, and of course, huffs her way in there, knocking people's drinks out of their hands. But she's mad because all these girls have swarmed around Professor Starkman because he's such a ladies' man.
Mm-hmm. He's the Shat.
Yeah, right. And he's just talking about serial killers. He's like, again, you know, Psycho was based off of this. And so he's like, it's just like stuff. He's just dazzling them with like his, you know, IMDb trivia.
Wikipedia says.
Exactly. So, you know, Cassandra asks how Rachel's date with Brian was, and she said, well, he went home right after dinner. But she's, you know, generally disinterested in this conversation, much like I was at this point.
Oh, at this point I was. I was ready to go to Jittery Joe's to get some coffee.
Is where you learn that they don't share a room, because that's when she says, well, why'd you come get a rubber in my room?
Right,
yeah.
If he went straight home.
Right.
I think that's the only point of the conversation.
Yeah.
I feel you. I was going to get another beer when that happened.
So apparently Starkman has been paying visits to Cassandra, and she reveals to Rachel that Starkman has told her that she's basically in for the TA position. Now, we find out, too, that Cassandra doesn't really care about the FBI thing, that's like an added perk for her. She's just excited that she and Starkman can have a better excuse to spend that much more time together.
Okay. What?
Yeah.
God.
Because his wife will just think we're working. Yeah, hey, right. Maybe I could even go to Quantico.
Yeah. Huh. Right. Which, you know, I kind of empathize with Rachel then. I think if I was going for something and somebody was like, I did it, so we'd have a better excuse to hang out. And, oh, yeah, career stuff. I think maybe I would shove her down some stairs or do something. But So
there's a little bit of Patrick Bateman in all of us. Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Okay, I'll hide the cat then.
I'm going to feed her to an ATM.
We're all American girls.
And this is really the most awkward American Girl doll story is the American Psycho.
That's what it was.
This is Rachel. She's got a knife and a leather jacket.
Mom, can I have that doll?
At this point, Cassandra's like, well, hey, why don't we get out of here? Let's go to Jittery Joe's. So there you are. That's where
Damn
we finally get Jittery Joe's gets mentioned.
Yeah.
Let's go
gets
to
mentioned
Jittery
in this
Joe's.
Movie, not the first movie. I don't know who said that.
Because I think they're getting coffee. And she goes,
well, they
no.
exist in the same universe.
Yeah, right?
There
yeah.
could be chains.
Yeah.
So maybe there was, Jeremy. Maybe there was a Jittery Joe's in the first movie. Maybe
Perhaps.
You just didn't hear.
Yeah, maybe that's
maybe
what
it was.
Was
all in Patrick Bateman's head.
There you go. And she goes, no, why don't I grab some wine and come to your room? And then, with no fanfare or anything, no showing any kind of dramatic action or whatever, the next thing you see is Rachel faking Cassandra's suicide.
Yeah, no reason.
Yeah. Cassandra is now hanged from the ceiling. And
poor
she's
Cassandra,
a
we don't even get to see you
her.
Die.
Yeah.
I wanted to see you die through this whole movie, and we don't even get to see
well,
that.
Well, there's no struggle with it. It's just like a wharf, wharf, she's dead.
And it gets worse.
Yeah,
this movie gets
Jackie,
worse.
Jackie, no, you Jackie, keep no. killing those people, Jackie.
Jackie.
So.
Oh, Fez.
No, he's a front runner also. He should watch out.
So what no, does Fez
I
say?
I want to be in the FBI at the Quantico. I want to be the teacher and assistant. Yaki, no.
Don't do that to Kelso. Say that.
Don't kill Kelso. That's all I got.
That 70s horror show would be fun.
I would watch it.
I would watch that, too. Okay.
So, Cassandra, randomly dead, and we have no reason, no understanding of why or how it happened, or, like, Mila Kunis is, like, what, 4 foot nothing, and she manages to get this other student strung up
yeah,
to the ceiling.
Yeah, she's the tiniest
and,
person.
Yeah, so ever. I assume she drugged her or whatever, but who knows. We don't...
That bottle of wine?
Yeah, we get no explanation.
Yeah.
So she goes to see Dr. Daniels again. Not sure why, because she walks in and she's like, I don't have an appointment. And he's like, well, what can I do for you? Do you want to talk about something? She's like, no, I don't want to talk about anything.
We never see any other, like, patient there.
Yeah.
It's not like she barges in on a different patient.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been nice to see that.
Yeah.
But instead, you're her only patient.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, she basically barges in. With no appointment to tell him she doesn't want to talk about anything. And then as he's like, why are you wasting my time? She just, like, berates him and, like, says, well, you have a dead-end psychology job, you know, here in town because it's a small town and you see kids who are more successful come and go. And you live in your mom's basement. Peace! And, like, just leaves pretty much. Like, she just tears him apart for no reason.
And then he goes home and he cries.
Of course he does. His mom pets his hair.
Starts listening to emo music.
His mom was nice, by the way.
What's that?
His mom seems nice, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
We haven't got to her yet.
No, we haven't.
We will.
But yeah, it's, yeah. And she loves Blossom hats.
Yeah.
So we cut back to Starkman and Keith. So it's back in the classroom. They're all wearing their original clothes. They're wearing their school clothes. And with the same exact crap on the board. And Starkman and Keith are going back and forth with this, like, Wikipedia depth facts about serial killers. Like, scratch the surface, generic stuff.
Right. This is the advanced class. Yeah.
And they're talking about Ted Bundy. And Rachel gives an opposing viewpoint about Ted Bundy or whoever it was to Keith. Now, hers is actually slightly more in-depth. It gives more of, like, the human aspect to it. So, like, she got her info from, like, some sort of, like, A&E biography documentary instead of Wikipedia, which, of course, impresses Starkman. In the meantime, Rachel realizes she's still got competition. She still has Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, who now we have... has had his first line.
Yes, his first line in the movie.
I don't think he speaks up when we see him originally.
No.
We see, but he speaks up before, and she has this the debate with him and the professor and whatever. Mm-hmm. So Rachel stalks Keith to the library. So she follows him in. She walks up behind him with this ice pick in the library and goes to stab him in the head, but then stops and sees he's drawing, like, murders and serial killers and stuff in his notebook. And she talks about how, like, you know that moment when you feel like this warm kindred kind of a thing, like with a kindred soul, that he must have these kind of demons and these horrible feelings, too.
Or he likes to doodle.
Yeah. And but, you know, he probably does. I was like, well, and I seriously thought, now this is interesting. Now they're going to be this, like, teamed up pair.
Teamed up? I would have done that.
Yeah. Like, they might have been teamed up, or maybe then... You know, she's the killer, but she's also she's the hunter, but she's also the hunted. And I thought, okay, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, well,
there's still time to turn it around.
Yeah, she goes, well, a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, and kills him anyway. It's like, what? And he screams. So the guy's gotten, like, one line. He's the competition. Again, I think, is he the only black guy in the movie?
Yeah, probably.
And he had one line, and you stabbed him in the head.
Yeah, and yeah.
So
but again, no one, these people are dying and no one, especially the library, come on.
Yeah, so he's dead in the library, but, like, at least other people are off the beaten path,
right,
or, like, not where anybody sees them. He's just dead in the library, so yeah. Nobody will go in there ever. So, and my other weird point with this is, it's not like she's the only candidate left. Like, if you kill the other candidates, the other top candidates, that just means other people become other top candidates. You know what I mean? It's not like you're the only four people competing for this. There are 100 people.
Right, like when you say...
And so when you eliminate numbers, you know, when you take out number 2, 3, and 4, new people become 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
So it's
like when you say 50% of all doctors graduate at the bottom of their class.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're stupid. They're just at the bottom of the class.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay. So
that can't be Shatner's only period. I mean, does she go to all his classes and keep track of the smartest people in those classes?
She has a very particular, like, plan. She knows what the track is.
She doesn't have time to go to his classes. She's got to go, you know, make fun of the psychologist.
And that's how it works, too, right? You take one class and... that's how the course works, right?
Yeah.
Like, I take a doctor,
especially
class
as a freshman.
Freshman.
Yeah. You only have one class.
Take my freshman doctor class, and I become a doctor.
Yep. That's how you become a sophomore.
Well, there you go.
Well, I don't know how you guys at East Washington
University. So we finally go back. Starkman is wondering where his booty call has been. and finds, gets into Cassandra's room and finds her body. And it was like, there's the note says, I guess he didn't love me enough or something weird like that. So he takes the note, takes a picture of him that she had, and then takes the answering machine tape where he left a message on there, okay, and then leaves because he's got to get rid of the traces. He's afraid it'll connect it to him. So Starkman calls Daniels and says, she is dead. Now, here's where the hilarity ensues.
Three's Company style.
He assumes Daniel was talking about Cassandra. Daniels assumed that he was talking about Rachel. So you can see where the mix-up was.
So they all meet at the Regal Beagle to go discuss what they're going to do next.
So because we're still
switching beds at night.
We still are all speaking vaguely. So Starkman says she, Cassandra, couldn't be a psychopath, but Daniel says she, Rachel, was. Starkman asks for Valium and basically goes about his way. And like he, and of course Daniel's like, wait, are you cheating on your wife?
I'm going to guess at this point Darren probably grabbed another beer.
Yeah.
No, I was still sipping the first one. It was my first third one. I had a couple before I got into it.
So I'm thinking, we're doing great. We're almost to the wrap-up point of this movie. So it's a big day. Rachel said she's going to – or she said she'll make – she says this weird line about, like, wherever the people I've killed are, I hope they can see that I'm going to make them proud. Because I'm going to be doing these good things.
Well, they can't. One is hanging from her dorm room. One's in the library. They can't see that.
Yeah. But she wants to make sure that she knows that they've given their lives so that she could be this person who hunts these serial killers and, like, changes the world or
okay,
whatever.
Okay, okay. Every time she does a voiceover, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, it's really awkward.
Yeah.
Because it's not like... I mean, like, even listen to, like, Patrick Bateman's. When he talks all somber.
Yeah, it's different than his normal talking.
And she's like, well, it's a big day. Like, she sounds
Quantico.
She sounds like she's narrating like a Disney Channel exclusive. She is.
Halloween Town, too.
All American Psycho. All American Girl. Yes. So the current TA comes in. Elizabeth McGuire comes in to tell everybody... Well, the sabbatical that Professor Starkman was going to take next year, he's going to be taking now, a year early. So there will be no TA position for next year.
Which I thought that was actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because then I'm like, you killed all these people for nothing.
Yeah. You basically, you know, you set this down the wrong track.
Right.
But also it made me wonder, so he gets... a perpetual flow of TAs from his current year of students. So if he doesn't have a next year, so then there's just this TA pool just dries up after that, or
for it's going to be a girl who's always the TA, because TA stands for
teaching assistant.
Tits and ass, correct?
Oh,
what did you say?
A teaching assistant.
Oh yeah, I guess it
teaching
stands for that
ass.
Too.
Yeah, tits assistant.
Tits assistant.
Tits assistant.
ridiculous. Anyway, yeah,
thank you.
So now Rachel goes to visit Starkman to see what's gone wrong. Now, okay, so we've also had a couple instances in this movie. In the classroom, Rachel's hair is longer. When she goes to the party, her hair is shorter and is different. Then when we see her in Cassandra's room, her hairstyle is different. Like, her hair keeps changing, too, which I would like to think was part of the unreliable narrator, but it's probably more of, like, the unreliable cinematographer.
the script supervisor.
Yeah. So she goes to visit Starkman, and now she's got, like, a perm. I don't know... She's got some sort of other weird situation going on, but
she's
asks,
an all-American girl. She's got to do all the hairstyles, Jeremy.
There you go. She asks what went wrong, basically. You know, and she says she has a very specific plan. She's the most qualified, and he kind of dismisses her. saying, you know, come on, there's tons of you who are qualified, you know, and you're saying you're the most qualified. And you know, it is. It's almost like we start getting the sense that just all of this about how good she is and how, like, I'm the perfect one for this. And, you know, he said my grades are good. We start getting the sense that that's all kind of BS. That this really, maybe that's just her own perception. This is her own unreliable narrative. So he dismisses her, but she comes around and starts rubbing his shoulders and calling him Bobby.
Bobby.
Like Cassandra did.
Bobby, Bobby, Bobby.
Yes, because they were in company.
Bobby.
Bobby, Booby.
Bobby, Booby.
So he notices she's wearing Cassandra's necklace and a dress that she has and asks where she got it. And she says, well, it was a gift from you because you love me. It's like basically just acting.
She's trying to gaslight him.
Well, I don't know if she's trying to gaslight him or she's just nuts.
We don't know.
A little bit of single white female.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's weird.
She's.
But she doesn't do it very well.
Yeah, she's almost
half-assed.
Like, yeah, she's assuming part of Cassandra's identity to get there.
Yeah.
You know, and because Cassandra, you know, okay, killing everybody and getting there by this method isn't getting it. So maybe sleeping with him or, you know, being his mistress is. And so she kind of is, like, assuming these parts from Cassandra. You know, he says, stop calling him Bobby. It's inappropriate. She goes, oh, but it was okay for Cassandra?
Ooh.
Ooh. So she
Jackie
says she's loved him before Cassandra left. And before Claire left him.
Actually, can I say this? Like, during when we were watching this, I think you were going, Jackie, and I was going, Bobby. And
yeah,
you were going,
probably. Jackie.
Bobby. Bobby, Bobby.
American Psycho the Musical.
There you go. Which they
Jackie,
have.
Jackie, Jackie.
They have an American
They have an American Psycho the Musical. I forgot to say that on your podcast. And I forced myself to listen to that music.
Yeah, it's like a jukebox.
Some of it's jukebox. Some of it's original.
Yeah.
But, yeah. There's a reason why.
I'll have to check out the music.
They do a good cover of In the Air Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty
which
good
I liked.
Cover.
Other than that, it's pretty generic. And I didn't really prefer it. But I would check it out if you want to.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
So.
I'll maybe.
That cover is at least worth it. It's
that
good.
Cover's pretty good.
It's a pretty haunting version of
it's pretty,
In the Air.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at this point, Rachel has evoked the name of Clara. Clara. And he goes, what? How do you know that name? Uh-oh, kid.
She's his favorite clown. Clarabelle the clown.
Clarabelle. So we are in, get ready, kids. It's twist time.
Oh.
So Clara.
Twist time.
Clara.
Actually, didn't we call it Lame Twist?
Yeah, Lame Twist.
And I think the Lame Twist was a song that was sung by Chubby Chinese Checker.
Correct. Yes.
Which is just the Asian Chubby Checker.
That's true. That's correct. Yeah. So Clara was the babysitter from earlier, but she was also Starkman's student.
No.
And was going to track Bateman down after looking at the files and help him out.
None of this makes sense.
Except here's the problem that I got from that. He didn't start teaching until after Bateman died.
Right.
And Bateman didn't die until Clara was there, and Clara died. So
and you just said that Clara was her teaching
student.
Her student.
Yeah.
So it does
so
not make
I'm
sense.
We were very confused by that.
Does that make sense to you, Darren?
No, that plot hole probably caused a really bad flat tire.
Yeah,
man. Yeah, it was. We were like, I went, wait, and rewound it just to hear it again. I'm like, nope, none of that adds up.
They're counting on nobody. Well, no. Maybe there's a deleted scene, but I don't know who would buy the DVD and find out.
Not I.
We didn't.
Nor yeah. I. No, I streamed this.
Talking about, we streamed it too.
Yeah. The I was not about to buy the DVD on this one. and we bought the DVD on Cruel Intentions 2. I was not about to buy it for this.
I bought the DVD of Hellraiser Inferno for my my spot on Podcast Under the Stairs. That's nice. The last. Either that one or Children of the Corn 4 were the worst movies I've bought a copy of.
Oh, God.
For a show.
I own... Oh, for a show? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I own The Adventures of Pluto Nash, but yeah, no, that was.
But you
for
like
a show.
That movie.
There's a little part of me that does. Please don't leave me. Anyway.
Is that the Eddie Murphy movie?
Yeah.
And it's
okay,
bad.
I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, it's bad.
Oh, Darren.
It's
never,
bad, but
I've
there's
never
like
been
a
more
little
jealous
piece of me
of
that likes it.
Of a human being. Can I be jealous of Darren right
I
now
made
for
him
never
watch
seeing
it.
That movie?
Yeah, you can be jealous.
Let me be jealous of Darren. I'm jealous of you, Darren.
So it turns out Rachel had a crush on her babysitter's professor, who was Starkman all along. She's crushed on him forever. So why would she okay, that also raises a question. If the babysitter, the person who was the babysitter, but also the student who was trying to help her not yet teacher FBI boyfriend track down the serial killer, God. Patrick Bateman.
My
why,
head.
If she knew she was going to the serial killer's lair,
my head.
Why would she bring the child with her? It makes even less sense than just the babysitter bringing the babysat with her.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go get a beer, like Darren did.
Yeah, this one section, I went, none of this makes sense. And I kept like trying to like figure it out, and it's all confusing.
Oh, it's terrible.
This is where the wheels come off.
Yeah,
and I think that's why visually from here on out, there's a lot of cars because they have to make up for the figurative wheels that are missing.
Yes, yeah. That is very
that's
correct.
True. That's good.
And so now Starkman keeps walking backwards, like in this daze, like he's either he can't. Personally, I think he was trying to work out these plot holes in his head.
I think he was like, was I need getting... to fire my agent.
Yes.
Immediately. What is her number again?
Yeah, regardless of what it was, he's walking back toward the window, which is open, and it's raining and everything. And Rachel just goes and blows in this little kiss, and he falls out the window.
Yeah, bated breath, I guess, right?
She's, I think she's like Russian.
Well, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
She's got like,
she had onions.
Heinous Russian
Jesus
dish.
That's how he falls out the window.
But yeah, so she, he falls out the window, and of course she turns around, and there's a janitor there at the doorway, and she goes, "Nice mop." Which is great writing. And the next scene, we see the mop jammed through the top of his, like she
again.
Jammed it through his mouth all the way up to the mop head.
How?
And like, you know how much force that has to take?
Many tiny Mila Kunis
yes.
did this.
Not to mention, she had to get him in a position where he wasn't moving.
She's shorter
and
than
have
Rhea
enough
Perlman.
Force to jam the entire mop through a blunt-ended mop through the top of this person's head through his mouth.
Let's have a twist again,
yes,
like we did last summer.
So he's and she manages to drag him with the giant mop out of his head and throw him in a dumpster.
Remember, I was like, wait, who was that guy? And you're like, that's the janitor. I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So she loads Starkman in the car in the passenger seat. And she basically starts driving away. Well, so a security guard comes out and apparently sees the dead janitor. And she drives away. He's like, hey, stop. You get back here. Yeah, you probably for a rent-a-cop, probably not like the best option is to invite the killer back to you to let them know that you saw.
It gets worse. Like, these killings get worse and worse because we don't even see any of them.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really see when the rent-a-cop got killed.
No.
You know what I mean?
Actually, we haven't seen anything except for the beginning of Robin Dunn strangling.
Right.
And even then, we didn't see it finish. We just saw his legs kick. We didn't see the ice pick. We didn't see the hanging. We didn't see him land after he fell out of the window. We didn't see anything. We saw the lady get bashed, I suppose. So she loads Starkman in the car, and as she drives away, you know, the guard, of course, calls her back, and he sees Professor Starkman bloodied and, like, his stomach is ripped open or whatever, and she is like, oh, he's just, you know, he's just having a bad day, or he's whatever it is.
Of course he's having a bad day.
And then he looks and doesn't see her. And all of a sudden you hear him, like, scream because he's being killed. Daniels, in the meantime, is trying to leave a message with Starkman. He keeps trying to get a hold of him over and over. But he doesn't answer. So they get a call back. It's Rachel calling to make an appointment. So... Daniels is, of course, confused because he thought she was dead, back to the previous hilarity. Rachel's parents show up at this point because she keeps saying they're going to be there. They want to see how the other half lives. And so, you know, they're what you'd expect from parents. There's some comic relief. But also, you know, they talk about the father who's a cheater and the mom who's the alcoholic. And it doesn't appear like any of that. They just appear like normal parents. Which is where I kind of get into the maybe she's nuts and just absorbing these other, like, character traits from other people.
Right, or something.
These stories from other people, but...
She kills someone and then, like, she takes that part of whatever. Yeah.
Like, so, remember, like the Taking Lives movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Remember how I said that Betty White is just taking these people's, like, souls?
Yeah.
Like, so when all these Golden Girls started dying, she's just taking their...
Which is why she was on Hot in Cleveland, because she's just got a whole new bunch of ladies to feast on for all forever.
And she was in Mary Tyler Moore, and Mary Tyler Moore died. Yeah.
So...
She's like a Highlander?
Yeah.
She's like a talent vampire.
Only be one Betty
White.
She's
taking every other actress and taking their stuff, and then, you know... showing up on Saturday Night Live. So her parents show up and they're fine. And of course they keep talking about how it smells terrible in the room. And they said, well, the toilet's backed up. And dad goes to use the toilet. Like, he's opening these doors like he's going to use the bathroom. And Rachel tells them, no. Don't do that. It's broken. You know, shoo them away. There are flies all over the room. So obviously we're getting a sense, since we know her MO, something's probably going on in there.
She's a freshman and she hasn't done her laundry in a while.
That happens too. I'm pretty sure that was the situation in my room too. But so we go back to Daniels. Starkman still hasn't called him back. So in the meantime, he decides to say, hey, he's going to call his mom for their date. And she says, he goes, don't worry. Yes, mom, I'll make sure that we get you back in time for murder. She wrote,
which is important.
Yes.
Now I told Jeremy, like, on one of our first dates that I wanted to create a spinoff for a long time of Murder, She Wrote, called Murder, He Read. And it would be like where he just would read the murder and be like, I read that once, and that one of those Jessica Fletcher novels. And was it Tom Bosley?
Tom Bosley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
I know.
It's an idea factory over there.
Yeah, right?
They actually did a spinoff of Murder, She Wrote, and Jerry Orbach was in it. And there was like a couple with someone. I can't remember what it was. Remember? Anyway, go ahead. Back to this movie, I guess. We can talk about Jerry Orbach if you want. Please, can we talk about Jerry Orbach?
So, at dinner, for Rachel... No, you can't. So, at dinner, They're at that French restaurant that they were at before because they could only afford one, you know, dinner scene in a restaurant.
I like to think Jerry Orbach is trying to find, like, these corpses.
Looks like he took a stab at doing his homework.
Oh, that's perfect.
Oh, you told me I can't talk about Jerry Orbach. Keep going. I'm sorry.
You could tell him about your idea for Cagney and Lacey, the new Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, can I?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Darren, I actually told him I wanted to create the new adventures of Cagney and Lacey. And basically, it's the ghost.
Okay, I'm with you.
It's the ghost of Lacey Peterson and James Cagney, and they solve crimes, and they help people. Mm-hmm. It's called
the Why New haven't Adventures you started writing this yet?
I'm surprised it's not on ABC Family Freeform.
It's Freeform. at this point, at dinner, Rachel gave Cassandra's necklace to her mother. And I really never thought the dialogue in this movie could have been worse.
Oh, it
could have been worse. Then Daniels shows up for the date with his mother. And it's all very awkward at this point. And there's like...
It's at that restaurant with that guy, the French waiter guy.
Yeah, who was like...
It's his third day.
Before it was
job.
His first day. Now he's been there a few more days.
This is my second day.
Yeah. Hello, Jackie. I will get you...
I will get you water, Jackie.
And I love, too, she's a freshman, yet we got no restaurant Jackie. Or anywhere hesitates to serve her alcohol constantly.
Yeah, no.
College towns.
And, yeah. You know. So, Rachel...
They're stricter in East Washington, though.
Yeah, that's where the good kids
They're
go.
They're prohibitionists.
You teetotaling bastards. So, Rachel goes into the bathroom, of course, and she's talking about... There's, like, this bit where her mom can't find her steak knife, and Rachel is staring into the mirror and saying she's actually, dreaming about cutting out her mom's vocal cords so she can't talk anymore, but she has to, like, calm herself down, and so obviously she took the mom's knife. She says as she's talking in the mirror, she's like, being Starkman's new, Professor Starkman's new TA... we'll have to brainstorm out at his cabin later, blah, blah, blah. And so it's like she's really believing this new crazy narrative that, like, she and the professor are together and that she's the new TA.
Well, I'm glad someone's believing the plot in this movie.
Well, it's the first time, like, that I've started to be like, okay, she's not just a sociopath. She's actually crazy.
She's actually crazy, yeah.
Or she's,
for doing the movie.
She's believing, she's absorbing these things. It was actually the first time where I was like, okay, so I suppose she's actually crazy and not just like, engineering all this stuff.
Yeah.
So, so she comes back out of the bathroom. She sees the Danielses. And says she would kill for her mother's blossom hat. She's like, this hat with this giant sunflower.
Don't know
on the
about
front
the future.
That's anybody's guess. Don't know, reason for getting all obsessed.
Go ahead, sing the
Whoa.
Rest of it.
No, I will not. Yeah.
Whoa.
We wrote Jenna Von Oy, who played Six on Blossom, and she never got back in touch with
Six?
Us.
Six?
Yeah,
on Blossom.
Well, we made a plan in Omaha. We were going to go to every Walgreens that we saw, and so we plotted out where all of them were, and then we took a picture with this marker board at each one. But instead of saying Six, we said Jenna Von Oy.
And the moment we got to the 16th one,
and it was Jenna Von Ointeen. Yeah, and so then we sent pictures to her, and we're like, "Hey, look, we're keeping your name alive," and she ignored all of
it. No, nothing. Thanks.
Yeah. Damn you, Jenna Von Oy.
That's not cool.
I know you don't have better things to do.
Right.
the
bad mouth you on a podcast now. There you go.
Revenge. So Dr. Daniels, not being, happy with being threatened, goes to Rachel's table and says he needs to speak with Ms. Newman for a moment. And so as he's walking away, we hear the mom say in the background, not quite enough to where you might miss it, but like loud enough so it's not, you know, a giant plot point. She says, "Did he call her by a different name?" And then Dr. Daniels is talking to her, and of course, later on they go, "Why did he call you that name?" when she gets back to the table. So Rachel's name is not Newman, probably not Rachel either.
To be fair, all freshmen look the same, and people call each other by, you know.
There you go.
Freshman, hey, Joe, blah, blah, blah.
So, but we get in a sense all of a sudden, like, oh, wait a minute, but if that's not her name, who is she then? So Dr. Daniels instead decides to go investigate Starkman's office. And as he drives into, like, the security thing, we see the security guard, like, pinned to the wall. And he's got his hand, like, knife stuck to the wall, like he's waving people in. So, just bodies everywhere. Of course, in the office, there are signs of
very
a struggle.
Very small school.
Yeah, you know. Nobody noticed that a whole day. The guy never blinks. He's very vigilant.
Honey, we're concerned. We came to visit you because we heard the deaths on campus.
Yeah.
That would be funny, but instead they don't do that.
No. So he goes to the police after he sees signs of a struggle and says, "I need to put out I need to report a missing person." And they said, "It's funny you should say that, you know, for Starkman, because his wife just did that too. And there are a bunch of other missing persons cases. Like this person, Rachel Newman." And he goes, "Wait a minute, what do you mean, Rachel Newman?" "Well, there was a missing persons thing. It wasn't some of her family because she was an orphan. And so her family wouldn't have known. There was no family to tell her anything. But some of the other kids on campus said she hadn't shown up for some stuff. So when the police went to go investigate, the Rachel we know opened the door and said, no, I'm fine. No, nothing to worry about. And so they just left. Didn't check any IDs, didn't do whatever. The cops were just like, yep, that checks out, and just took off.
I mean, it would have been really, really hard to do more work.
I know.
Yeah.
Horror movie cops are notoriously very lazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, that okay.
Yeah, well, that'll sure. Adds up. So,
you say so, sure.
Every time I think this movie is going to end...
Oh, it keeps going.
Something new starts. So, like, I thought it was going to end when, like, we got the twist about Starkman and whatever. About the babysitter.
I thought it was going to end when Robin Dunn died.
Then I thought it was going to end... Well, it did in my heart. then I thought it was going to end when they, like... They realize that that's not Rachel's real name. And now I'm just wondering, I'm like, when is it really going to end here? It just keeps happening. Meanwhile, Rachel, and back to our crazy motif, she leaves a message for Starkman on his answering machine. So while packing, you know, she's continuing to put things away. And she's going through stuff in the closet, and she goes, "How did you get open?" And there's a mummified corpse, like, hung in a garment bag. Turns out that was the real Rachel. She killed the real Rachel and just assumed her identity when the cops were like, "Are you Rachel?" And she goes, "Mm-hmm, yep, that's me." And so, because the real Rachel had no family, nobody came looking for her.
Right,
after that.
No one cared about Rachel.
Also, Nobody is like... Nobody's wondering why it's beyond the regular stench of, like, a freshman dorm.
Right.
It's, like, corpse-level freshman dorm.
And she's just okay. Like, I'm going to sleep here.
Yeah, that's fine. She's
and
good.
Robin Dunton, like, well, it kind of smells in here.
Yeah, exactly. He was in her room, and he wasn't like, rotten corpse.
Well, let's have sex. It's okay.
Yeah, that's all
right. I don't like that
smell. The ice pick didn't scare him away.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. He was in it to win it.
And boy, did he win it.
So, as the police arrive, they see Fake Joel drive by. So the police, of course, spin around and give chase. Now this goofy-ass music starts playing. And it's not even like the sneaking around you know, Sweet Life and Zach and Cody goofy sneaking music like it was before. Now it is like,
I told you not to watch that without me.
Now it's like goofy hillbilly chase music. And I was really confused because when we get a shot of the exterior of the cars that are running, you hear the music loud and clear. But when you get inside of the car with Rachel, it's playing like it's on the radio. So I wasn't sure if she was just listening to it on the radio or if it was outside just playing in real life and it was muffled.
She turns it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I feel like they were going to dub something in later and then realized they could not get the rights to it. So they're like, just put in hillbilly chase music.
Yeah. Just take the music from the police scenes and Last House on the Left, music from Dexter, and music from the end of Clue.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, that's exactly what it
that's
was.
Exactly what. God, wow.
So
put it in a blender, serve it up.
Perfect. So they come up. Of course, the police are like, "Oh no, we're coming up to that to Old Mill Bend, which is like a dead man's curve." We got to stop.
Old
if
Mill
she gets
Bend.
Past that, you know, we can't be going this fast.
That's my favorite.
Of course, they try to get up next to her.
That's my favorite Beach Boy song.
What?
Old Mill Bend.
There you go. Yeah. So they get up next to her, and she starts, like, ramming their car, or, like, kind of nudging their car. And so they go, well, here, get me closer. And then just starts, like, opening fire on her car. So then she decides, I'll pull over. So the police get out, and they walk up to the sides of it, and then she decides to gun it. So they're not that far behind her. But the police, of course, you know, proceed to chase again. But somehow, even though they're not that far behind her, she's gotten enough time to take Starkman's body and, like...
Oh, yeah!
Like, hang it up on the railing in a position for them to come and investigate. And once they're like, oh my God, what is that? And they go over and they see him. But then she is behind them in the car and goes to ram all of them.
Right.
Like off the cliff.
The Cliff Huxtable.
There you go. But yeah, it's
call
like,
back.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So she's ahead enough. She's far enough ahead where she can lug this little gal can lug out a William Shatner sized person. Pose him, back the car up, and presumably, you know, set up a bunch of other hysterical stuff. Like, she seems very odd. So, at that point, you know, everybody jumps out of the way. The car rams through the rail and goes over the curve. And, of course, at the bottom of the ravine, the car explodes and burns.
Like so, water will make a car do.
Yeah, which it often does. Like a few rocks to the hood of the car will do.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go through this kind of like montage of news pieces showing the details of Rachel's murder spree and, you know, everybody who died and where they're finding all the bodies that were out in the open for many days before anybody found them.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So then we flash forward, and of course, right there, they flash forward to Quantico 2 years later, and Daniels is now an author, and he's plugging this book about Rachel and this killing spree and her death, and he runs through and says she's one in a million.
One in a million.
And as people are getting their book signed, we see a gal walk up.
Oh, wonder who it is.
It looks like the original assistant, Elizabeth McGuire, but it's Rachel.
Chucky.
And she even says her name is Elizabeth McGuire. So we can assume that she's probably killed Elizabeth just like she has the others who she absorbed. And when he asks, of course, he's stunned. And she says, no, I'm Elizabeth McGuire, and then kind of threatens him again and then takes off. When he asks who that was, they say, oh, Agent McGuire.
Oh.
Well, she's the youngest agent to be drafted directly into the FBI.
That's Agent Mark
McGuire.
Straight
out of her sophomore year. So, she was a freshman before, end of her freshman year. This is 2 years later. She's been drafted out of her sophomore year. So she's taken, let's just assume she took on this other gal's identity. Like, just none of this adds up.
We don't even get to see that killing either.
Doesn't anyone check records? I'm pretty sure the FBI takes your damn fingerprints.
Fingerprints, right?
Probably more than that.
I think you've been deuced, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Then we get some narration saying how smart she was.
No, she ain't smart.
And Rachel was actually, she put the real Rachel in the car that went over and blew up.
That's
so
right.
Not only was she messing with Shat's body and all that stuff, she was also setting up a corpse behind the wheel, aiming it perfectly, and then putting a brick on the gas pedal and having time to, like, escape.
All to have it come back 2 years later.
Yeah, and she actually, I didn't even write it down because I was so pissed at this point, but they basically say a Patrick Bateman quote from American Psycho
they do.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
About, like, the, like, you're doing nothing, or, like, if you do it this way, you know, it's like you've done nothing at all. Or,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's like you didn't do a movie at all.
Yeah. And, yeah, I said, we get some narration saying how smart she was, but mostly we just feel dumb for watching this. And then you've been deuced.
You've been deuced.
Oh, God. I apologize.
I think the
circle
real...
is complete.
Oh, my God.
So
I can't believe we did that.
Yeah. Well,
I can't believe
we
made you watch that movie twice, Darren. We didn't make you watch it the first time, but we made you watch it the second time.
It was a pleasure. It was I would have watched a much worse movie to get to come on your show.
Well,
so
wow,
we may take you up on that.
Yeah. I think the real I think the real tragedy is that Ricky Martin is an orphan now.
Yeah,
he's just a cat running around.
I'm sure he's with some family who's neither going to microwave him or feed him to an ATM.
So he's not in this household. I know that.
Maybe Eric's mom lets her sleep in her hat boxes for all her blossom hats.
Yes. While they watch Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote. Yeah, perfect.
So that's what we thought of the movie, but let's see what other people thought of American Psycho 2.
What do we got?
All-American Girl. This person gave it a 1 out of 10. They're called Asad K. Han 20. Which I don't know is a terrorist group.
No,
okay. I don't know. I just was wondering.
I think it's somebody's DJ name.
Oh, that's a good DJ name too.
Asad Kahan.
It says an unnecessary sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Why did this movie get made? American Psycho 2 is a terrible movie. It may be one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Mila Kunis should immediately fire her agent for even informing her on the script, which we talked about. You know, she didn't know. Most of the movies were implausible. Most of the murders were implausible. There is no way her character could have killed all those people. I advise you to avoid this movie and check out the original American Psycho instead. Sound advice.
That's fair. Although I have to
say, the Mila Kunis thing, I'm like, come on.
And it's like you said earlier too, like, as much as we're like, oh, God, you know.
It's not the worst movie.
Yeah, and she was also, like, she hadn't been
doing
terrible stuff. It is, but you know what? Like, if I was trying to break into showbiz, and it was like, nobody's really starting at the top.
Are you breaking into movies, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the odd kind of situation. So, you know what? If somebody came up to me and said, hey, I'm going to give you your big chance. And I went, oh, my God, this is amazing. What's the movie? And they said, Fart Party 1997. I'd go, okay, you know, but I really want to get in there. So Fart Party 97 it is.
Like, are you in that movie?
I was in Fart Party 98.
Oh, man. Fart Party 97 is better.
But you know what I mean? It's like – I don't fault her for being like, hey, I got the chance to do a movie, so I did it.
Right.
Like, now, if she was still doing those things, I might be like, Mila Kunis, what are you doing,
but
kid?
I do fault her for saying, this movie doesn't really exist.
I do, too.
That, like, I'm like,
come on.
Clearly,
you knew what you were being part
you
of.
You knew that part.
Yeah.
You should just laugh it off.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. It kind of drives me nuts when people, like, if you did a bad movie, just own it. I mean, it drives
right?
me nuts.
Tom Cruise does them all the time.
Yeah, well,
some people even go and accept their Razzies.
Halle Berry did.
Yeah.
But she's somebody who can move forward and you know, appreciate it for what it is. But, like, you get people like Kevin Bacon, who just, you know, turns his back on Friday the 13th.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. Or Sam Raimi, like some of his early stuff that Court, Court from Cinema Psyops can tell you. He kind of denies some of his early stuff, but it has a special place for Court. So if people love it, why deny it? Even if it's, you know, bad or cheesy or whatever, man.
Yeah, we
got a chance
about
to
that.
Participate and make a movie that most of us, like American Psycho 2, those people were in a movie, and I never got into a movie, you know, where I had speaking roles or where I got to be part of this production
right.
or whatever. So kudos to them for actually doing it. That's at least something. Like, if you don't take away anything else, that's something from it.
What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, I've never made a movie. And I as a guy that's been in a lot of bands, you know, hopefully Mila Kunis, while she's listening to this, we know she will. understands that we're not saying, at least I think what we're not saying is that it's a bad movie. We're just saying we don't like it. That's right. I'm not a big fan of the movie, and there's things that I didn't like about it, but I'm not saying that somebody else doesn't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of liking it, this person liked it. They gave it a 10 out of 10.
What?
And they are called Voltsin.
Keela Moonis.
And they say, hilarious. I don't give a damn what's been said about this movie. I like it. The main character is likable, cute, witty, self-confident, and charismatic. I'm still watching it now, and to be honest, I didn't care for much about the original American Psycho. But I say this on demand by chance. I saw this on demand and by chance and figured, what the hell? Let's give it a shot. 23 minutes into this film, I'm hooked. Why? Because Robin Dunn died 23 minutes in the movie, lady.
He did.
Okay. She says, this girl reminds me of me.
Oh.
I know. I'm like, wait a minute. Some differences, yes, but many similarities. I've always wanted to be a profiler and fascinated with serial killers. Right?
If your name is Bobby and you like shoulder rubs from students, give me a call.
Disregard what's been said about this film. Watch it for yourself and make up your own mind. In my humble opinion, this one is golden. So this person liked the movie.
Yeah.
So kudos that you liked it.
I honestly like... Okay, so if this movie, if they fix some of the plot hole issues, get rid of the American Psycho piece.
Wait, actually, the police can reach this person at... No, I'm just joking.
If they'd gotten rid of the American Psycho references, like, don't even try with that crap. Just make it something else, you know?
That's automatically 30% better movie in my mind.
I think so, too, yeah.
But also fix some of the plot holes and market it as a black comedy. I think this movie would have been way better, and it would have been palatable. But I think
Clay Pigeons or something.
Yeah.
But the studio was, I think it could have been fine probably, but I feel like the studio was like, well, I wonder if we could do more of a cash grab if we jam this other stuff in here and change a lot of the dynamic, because some of that had to have changed to accompany American Psycho references. So I feel like maybe it was something different. Maybe it had been something that, you know, probably would have ended up having some sort of a cult following. But now it's like, this. You know, it's just, it has a lot of flaws to it. And I'm glad somebody appreciated it for what it was.
Right.
Outside of like the,
her serial
killer. I see a lot of the crazy in myself, but.
Ooh. Her crazy eyes remind me of me. Hey, I wanted to go back, Darren. You were saying that you were in a lot of bands, and of course, Mila Kunis has been in a lot of things in her time as far as acting. Have you ever been in a band that you like really hated? That was the worst band. And if so, would you deny the fact that you were in that band?
No.
Right.
I'm trying to think of. There's definitely been bands that I was in, especially around the time of quitting such a band that, you know,
gotcha.
There's a bunch of people that I'm not getting along with or something like that. And I'm one of those, everything I did got me to where I am right now. And right. I'm pretty okay with where I am right now sort of people.
That's a great attitude. I love it. And also, I thought you played bass in Shatner's Pubes. Isn't that?
Yeah, you were in that band? I did before I switched over to drums. My dad was a bass player.
In the band Shatner's Pubes.
Yeah,
isn't that the band that we said?
He played drums in Shatner's Pubes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
That speed metal band. All right,
I'm still waiting for my residual checks.
We like to do our five questions at the end of our episodes.
Yep. So. We can run through these real quick. So I'm going to say, what is the best part of this movie?
I'm not touching this real quick.
What?
I mean, I will, but I want you to go first.
Me go first?
No, Jeremy.
Okay.
So honestly, and of course I'm biased this, but I liked Robin Dunn. I thought his characterization was fine. I would have liked to see more with the character, and get into it a little bit more. I think he was almost like a Bret Easton Ellis character that never got flushed out.
Right.
And so I almost would have liked to see. There's all these characters where I see like, ooh, are him and Rachel going to team up? And then eventually they turn on each other. Or like later I was like, hey, Kevin and her are going
to
team up.
So it would have been good to get Robin Dunn and her to maybe team up and be.
The characters.
American Psychos.
Yeah.
Instead of Psycho.
Yeah. Where she was genuinely psycho and he was just the affluenza type, whatever. But I liked his character. I just wanted to see more of it. But I like, of course, Robin Dunn does a great job acting with whatever he's given.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, and there's a lot of, I think, good starting points story wise.
Yeah.
But they just didn't quite go where I wanted to.
They don't fulfill themselves.
So, like,
with it, yeah.
I could see, like, whoever wrote this, I could see, you know, I would hope that we'd see better things from them in the future.
Hopefully.
But, I mean, this movie is not, like, it's not, I think it needs a lot of work, and it is definitely not even near being one of my favorites, but I can see a lot of, like, little nuggets of things where I'm like, keep that next time,
right?
Or keep this or this
someone,
kind of a thing.
Someone forgot to tell this filmmaker less is more.
Yeah, and of course this was directed by Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman, did you
Morgan
know Morgan
J.
Freeman?
Freeman?
Morgan J. Freeman.
Yeah.
Oh,
Darren, what I directed was your, American Psycho.
Darren, what was your favorite part?
Oh, my favorite part of this.
I know.
Okay, I will question. Not. I will not say that thing I joked about. If my favorite part of this were the moments where the humor worked.
Right.
Because there were times when, despite my moments of seething, I would still chuckle.
Me too. I chuckled a little bit in this. Yeah. I'll give you that.
And it's mostly that like black comedy kind of thing where you're just like, ha.
But you feel like they should have done that more.
Yeah, or you know, done that, like, decide what they were going to be because they were kind of all over the place. But
so my favorite part of this movie was Ricky Martin. Okay, it wasn't.
It was a beautiful cat, though.
Robin Dunn was my second favorite. Well, was probably my favorite, but if I'm going to say something second, I actually enjoyed the actor who played the psychologist, the shrink.
Oh, you did?
I thought he was okay. I thought he was decent. I thought they didn't use him correctly, and I thought, and Shatner was fine. Again, they didn't use Shatner correct in this movie at all. Talk about someone who could give black humor to it, and they just don't use it correctly. But I thought, like, whoever casted this movie did a fine job. I just think that they were given something bad to, like, say.
Yeah.
But I think go ahead.
Like you were saying, you hoped that the people that wrote this went on to do better things.
Yeah.
Alex Sanger and Karen Craig. Karen Craig, according to IMDb, did nothing else ever after this.
Ooh,
that's fair.
And Alex Sanger did a couple shorts and 5 or 6 episodes of a TV show last year called Blank Page.
Okay.
P-A-I-G-E.
Okay.
But this was his only ever movie credit.
Oh. I thought they
maybe seriously. Blank Page was awesome, but I've never heard
maybe.
Of it.
I'm on top.
I think
of
that
it.
They
I'll
have. I felt like they had the beginnings of some good stuff.
I think so too. I just don't think they had the right people to say to direct them to go. Maybe we should do this. Instead, they had people that said, "Well, American Psycho was good. Let's tack that on."
And maybe they got sick of the process. Maybe they were like, this is our first go out.
Right.
Here's our thing.
Yeah, that's
and then
true
the
too.
Studios got a hold of it. We're like, now it's American Psycho 2, baby.
Yeah.
And maybe they were just like, man, F this, I'm out. So
it was very early in their careers. It wasn't like it killed a career.
Yeah.
That's
it's
true
just
too.
One didn't seem to go on in that trajectory, and another one took a different route.
Yeah.
Of a lot more
start out. You might as well start out not doing something good, as opposed to like doing like really great movies and then having like a stinker and people go, well, that's the end of your career.
Snow Dogs.
Yeah. Snow Dogs. He's great as OJ.
Yeah. He came back. He's had a resurgence.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Would you reboot, continue, or cancel?
Me?
Yeah.
Cancel. Well, they tried. They didn't really reboot. They made a musical of it. That doesn't really count. Cancel. If this is what they're going to do, if you're going to reboot it, why not have, like, they did Psycho 2, and they still had Norman Bates in it.
Yeah.
And that was actually a decent, okay movie. I actually liked Psycho 2.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they can't have, they don't need Christian Bale. They could just have someone else play Bateman. Why not have Bateman in a movie? But I don't know. I'm just kind of like cancel because it's collective in its in ambiguousness. The first one is that I just say cancel.
Okay, Darren, how about you?
The only thing I would accept or show any interest in this movie is if they did do later on in Patrick Bateman's life with Christian Bale, because he's alive at the end of the one I like. But I don't see the point in it. I see it as just a revisiting of the same story. So I would probably cancel.
Yeah, I agree. I put so, and sometimes I like to try to not just imagine it like would I reboot, continue, or cancel like as a movie. Would I reboot it as a movie or would I do something else? At first I thought, well, maybe I would reboot it, have them reboot it, but like as a TV show?
Like Hannibal?
Well, no, like as a TV show, but work on the black comedy piece and you'll kind of go from that route like I was talking about.
They did.
But then
Bates Motel. I mean, why couldn't you?
Well, because I think the more I talked about what I was thinking, I was like, reboot. As like an hourly show or whatever, like a television show, focus more on the black comedy, less on like the drama piece, and have this crazy person on a campus and everything. And then I went, oh, that's Scream Queens, and so I just put cancel
Scream
at that
Queens.
Point. So I was like, no, I don't think it would differentiate enough.
I think,
and I don't want them being like, it's American Psycho.
American Psycho. I think this movie cheapens the first movie.
I do too.
And I don't like that.
Me either.
Well, so,
do you think they could do like an American Psycho television show? Like if they did an hourly drama like Hannibal?
They would really have to do it like Hannibal for me to really get behind it, because they have to keep it as the aesthetic of the movie. Because if they don't, what's the point of the movie and the book?
Because we've already had Dexter.
Right. Yeah, that's true. All right. Do you think this movie stands on its own, Darren?
That's a harder one to answer because they did shove so many references to the first one, so it wasn't ever trying to stand alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would stand alone if it didn't do that, but no, because they tried to force it in and it killed it in my mind.
I think it doesn't either, because if you're using that as a plot device,
yeah,
for the later twist reveal, it doesn't stand on its own.
See, I said yes, and the reason is this. Because there is nothing that, like, we have to understand from the first one. We don't even have to understand who Patrick Bateman is. Because they're just saying,
it helps.
Well, they say Patrick Bateman, and all you have to understand is serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that from contextually. So the way I looked at it was, they could say, you know, oh, it's, you know, Nikolai Jablonski. And they could put a different name in there the whole time.
Jablonski. Oh, God. I hated that guy.
They could put another name in there the entire time, and it would still be the exact same thing. It doesn't matter what the name is. It's just more them trying to cash in on the name. There's nothing else from the first movie that makes its way over here. There's nothing you have to understand about the first movie, really, to understand he's a serial killer over here. So I said it did stand on its own.
I guess in order
that's
to...
That's a fair point. I could totally get behind that.
I guess in order... I get what you're saying, but to me, you can't even understand this movie, so...
Yeah, it doesn't stand on its own as a movie in
as a movie itself, it doesn't, but yes, as a sequel, it does, because you can
If you just pick this up,
yeah,
you could watch it without understanding the first one.
Yeah.
But I would hope that you would watch the first one.
And in fact,
the feeling of being totally lost has nothing to do with not having seen the first movie.
Right. Correct. That's true. That's correct. So yeah, perhaps it does.
So, but that transitions us nicely into our next question. Does it make you want to watch the first movie?
Does this make me want to watch the first movie?
Yes.
No, because I watch it on my own. In other stuff makes me want to watch the first one. Because there's so many topics and so many things that come from the first one.
Yeah.
That, like, daily, you see those GIFs all the time. That's what makes me want to watch American Psycho.
Yeah.
This does not make me want to watch the first one. How about you, Darren?
Like, if I had no knowledge of American Psycho,
yeah,
having seen this movie, would I want to search it out?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing of this movie. Well, I am curious. So I might have gone, I'm a series completist. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of series of movies that I finished just because I watched the first one.
Right.
And stuff like that. But aside from trying to search it out to be like, there's got to be a reason why they made a sequel to this. But as an advertisement or an enticement, no, this movie would not make me want to see anything else related to it.
No, me either.
You know what? And I completely agree with that. I had originally put yes, because watching this makes me go, oh my God, I want to see the first one again.
But that's also my initial reaction sometimes when the sequel's not that great. I'm like, because I want to watch something great.
Yeah.
But I think Darren's right.
Well, and I think that the first one that we immediately were like, let's watch it right now, was that Pitch Perfect?
Yes.
Because we were like...
We did.
We were like, what is... Like, we were very confused about stuff because there was like... it did not stand on its own, so we were kind of confused about like what certain things meant.
Mm-hmm.
And so we watched it right away, and we actually were like, wow, this, I like the feeling in the first one better. But like, I would, they're so different that if I was picking up the second one and I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be like, well, let me see if the first one was better. I would probably be like, assume they're the same and keep moving on.
I would think it was more, they would, that the first one was more comedic.
Yeah, probably.
Based on this movie than what it really is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good call.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now, Bradley, sum up your experience in two words.
Plot holes. Because
there's many.
There's
of them.
A lot of plot holes, okay, in this movie.
I said,
that's my experience.
I said tarnished legacy. Because I think that, I think that, you know, and like we were saying earlier, it cheapens the first one. Like, if, you know, if you're like, oh, it's the American Psycho series, you know, it really tarnishes or cheapens like the impact of the first one. And not because it, well, it's not a great product, but it's mostly because they take, and they're basically saying, they're taking this world that does leave some to your imagination, and they're capping that and saying, nope, no more imagining. I'm telling you what, how this ended and what it was, and that's it. Okay. So,
you, Darren?
I think the first thing that came to mind when thinking of two-word summary would be, wait, what? And I think I'm going to stick with that.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay. So we're good there. So
yeah, so I think we're, like I say, skip this.
Yeah, I think.
I think if you, I think, I mean, it's fair to skip. If you're a completist like Darren, watch it if you want. I don't think you're going to get anything. I think it might piss you off
it,
a little
it
bit.
It is
more.
What it is. Like, yeah. If you're watching it just because, you know, don't watch it because you're expecting some greatness. Just take it for what it is, or play it in the background or whatever. But
yeah. But Darren, popcorn. Thanks for doing this crossover event with us.
It was a great time. The time flew by.
Excellent. Yeah. Hey, one more time. Can you tell us where they find the Psychosemantic Podcast?
Yeah, the Psychosemantic Podcast is on the Legion Podcast Network, and it's on iTunes, and it's on Stitcher. It's on psychosemanticpress.com. It's a little website that I have for it's mostly my friend's political cartoons.
Oh,
you
nice.
Go there. That's that and my podcast. So psychosemanticpress.com is that one. That's a lot of words. That's why I usually say the other stuff first. politics, movies, political movies. There's going to be the American. When you're hearing this, look for the episode we all did on the first, the good American Psycho, or the better American Psycho.
The better American Psycho for most people.
Yeah.
What else you got coming up? Do you know?
Let's see. Just About Ready to Drop is an episode that I did with Duncan McLeish at Podcast Under the Stairs and Smoke. We're all on the Midnight Horror Show together. We did an episode on Best of Enemies, a documentary on the debates Gore Vidal and William Buckley Jr.
Nice.
Had.
Nice. Sorry, I got
so
excited.
That's getting ready. That'll be out by the time you hear this. And yeah, setting up some other things down the line. But I try to – my things change with the political climate a little bit. So there's going to be some – fuck you Nazi kind of movies. gonna do a couple movies here and there for that, and then we'll be around Halloween and Christmas and all that. And my first year anniversary is coming up. Nice. My first episode came out right before the inauguration, so January. Very cool. We're gonna be at year one.
Nice.
Oh god, don't remind me.
we'll have to send some well wishes your way around
we
that
will
time
celebrate
too.
That instead. But yeah, and where can they find us, Jeremy?
Well, you can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play Music, or of course, you can go to our Facebook page. We will post new things there. Plus, we have a lot of our other podcast friends will put their shows up there as an example, Psychosomatic Podcast. You'll be able to find that there as well. All sorts of great things. Plus, we have surveys and we have you know, chats going, and we have other things there as well. So definitely go check that out.
And thanks once again to Darren.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Oh, and I guess my group, my Facebook group is facebook.com/psychosemanticcast. One
there
word.
You go. There you go.
A lot of political talk and photoshopping going on in there.
You were amazing at the photoshopping.
Thank you for
actually,
the Ninja Turtles.
Darren gave us the picture of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Urkels, which was fantastic.
This is fantastic.
It is.
You put the picture in my mind.
It's actually.
Hopefully, we do.
At work, it's my desktop background.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
thanks.
Funny. So, remember, guys, the sequel is king.